Hello, welcome to LaserCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard here with Josh Olswitch. Josh, how you doing?
Surviving.
Just surviving.
Not thriving, but surviving.
Yeah, that's where we are right now. Market's a little bit down. We haven't recorded in a couple of weeks, so it's probably more than a little bit down.
That's why we're down, bro. We haven't been recording. Every time there's a conference, Miami, we dumped. Consensus, we dumped. No more conferences. NFT NYC, pray for them, because thus far this year it hasn't been good
and stretch. The NFT crowd's been trying to survive despite markets being down tremendously. As long as they're not looking at the USD value of their NFTs, it's not so bad. But if you're looking at the USD value, it's down just as bad as everyone else. But I guess we have got to catch up with the state of the market. We are at least from a 200-week moving average where I stand at support, historical all-time high, hovering right at it. If this is the bottom, it's going to have to be one of those grindy ones, because we certainly have spent a decent amount of time here. Nevertheless, a ton has happened in the past few weeks. We don't have to necessarily catch up with every single bit of it, but we broke down from the levels that were kind of your must hold. 30K finally crashed through. If 30K was 6K, then it's that level is gone, and we are at the equivalent of last cycle's 3K. I don't know. What's your thought on the market?
So a few weeks ago, I went on Coindesk TV, and talked about this 22K level. People thought I was the devil. And like, anytime you say anything bearish publicly, people just want to take your head off. I get it. I understand that. But not only do we get there quickly, but we're there now. The reason I go places and say levels is based off of stuff like the 200-week moving average, which historically has been the bottom. The problem now versus then is we sort of had some runway to get there and like figure our stuff out at that level by the time we got there. To me now, in this case, this is an opinion, but it feels like we got there early and we have a ways to run yet. Based on fundamentals, not technicals. Technicals tell you this is the level. It's been the level. If you're going to buy, if you're going to DCA, right? Not investment advice, but this is the level.
It's a reasonable place to do so.
Right. So if this level breaks in a big way, then that changes the outlook for a lot of people using this as a level. Now you could go deeper and say we've never had an aggressively rate rising environment in Bitcoin's history, and now this time's different and we don't have that wind at our sails or whatever, right? We can still have hikes coming.
The macro element is huge. Can I share with you something that freaks me out from a pure like levels perspective?
Yeah.
If you look at the volume, the VRPR or whatever.
VPVR, yeah.
VPVR. It doesn't really get thick until like 12K. You know, like all this, because we had this huge range up in 2017 throughout 2019, 2020 that just made, you know, 7 to 12K just this huge volume interest. And then when you dig into where we traded, we marked up from 12K all the way to 60K pretty quickly. And so we didn't build out that kind of big range, and what we did build out from a volume perspective stopped at 30K. So now it just looks like this vacuum from basically 30K to 12K. From a just volume perspective, where trading has occurred in the past, it looks like even using something like that, which we've used in the past to kind of determine where is there going to be interest. That's the scary part. that volume gap all the way down to 11 or 12K, in combination with everything you just said about where the macro winds are, it makes it much harder to buy the 200 week, even though I've talked about it a bunch. Like, it's a scary thing to do. It's sitting here right now, it's a very scary thing to do, even though it has held every market in the past. It's a scary thing to do. So what are you going to do?
So I'll say it like this too. Like, this isn't reflecting my personal positioning. I'm not short right now. I'm not long right now. I'm nothing right now. But, you know, the question is, think about in general, do people want to be short here in aggregate? Would they want to close their shorts? Would they want to be long? Would they want to do nothing? Is there a reason to be buying here? Right. It just not just you and me, but just generally speaking, you know, there's TA saying it's okay to be buying here. There's fundamental stuff that's saying there's no way, there's a, I almost said depression, there's a recession coming. There's all these issues, right? Like the list of fundamental issues macro wise is just never ending. Like I don't wake up any day over the past couple of months of just seeing any good news anywhere.
Here's some uplifting stuff. Nope, every day something terrible.
So you, when you look at levels to the downside, what do we have? We've got the previous all-time high in 2017, 2018. We're basically there, which is around 19.8, 20.2, whatever it is. And the next level after that is 12, 13, right? Like, it's just, that's what it is. It doesn't mean we're going there in one shot. Doesn't mean we're going there at all. But if I look at levels and I'm honest, and I especially added VPVR onto that, I mean, yeah, that's the last consolidation area. Just like 12 is a support now, 30 to 60 is going to be resistance when we get back up here again, right? It's the same TA, just straightforward.
Yeah. In a vacuum, it seems like if we reclaim 22K, 21, like show some buying off the bottom and close the weekly with something, then maybe it gives you the ability to go bounce and retest, you know, 28 to 30K, something like that. From a just pure technical, what I would be expecting from a chart like this, no macro, no recessionary concerns, no contagion in the market. I mean, we've seen tons of contagion in the market. There was reports that basically the whole move from what 24, 25K down to 20K was the forced liquidation of Three Arrows Capital assets that they'd borrowed from other people. I mean, so you look at this in a vacuum, you think, okay, we're going to have some kind of capitulatory bottom, go back and see what happens at 22K. If it can get past that, see what happens at 28K. Retest those levels. Certainly nobody's talking about, okay, all-time high soon. You know, it's like, how bad does it get? How long do we go down? How long do we go sideways out? How long do we have to repair? How long until the momentum turns in a positive direction? It reminds me, I feel like we are in some form of that 2018 capitulation, just a matter of how dark can it get first in the face of all of the things that are nasty in the broader economy.
Yeah, to me, it still feels like I can see the beginning of the tunnel, but I can't see the end of the tunnel. You know, right. I can see the light on the wrong direction. On top of that, we've got all this crypto specific uncertainty, right? With 3AC, with Celsius, with anybody who touched any of those things, everybody's coming out from the woodwork saying we're fine, we're okay, everything's good, right?
It's a different type of uncertainty. The certainty is that they're out of the game, right?
Right.
I mean, holy crap. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, people just getting taken out and finding out that people were maybe doing very sketchy things, although I guess not confirmed on either front, but the weakest, most leveraged players from the lend and borrow market and from the hedge fund market have been victims of this kind of early decline in the market and or mid decline. I don't even know what you call the rapid decline. You know, they were over leveraged or overexposed to things they shouldn't have been. And there's also talk that some of it might be contagion still from Luna. You know, like that was the first thing that they were counting those assets on their balance sheet and then going against them. So seeing these ripple effects, and that's what we were told we were going to see some of these ripple effects, but now they're happening. It's pretty gross. Some people think that this is already enough capitulatory. Big Barry, I don't know if you saw Barry Silbert starting to buy, although
yeah, why don't you map out where the last time you said that was?
I don't know. I don't want to do that.
Take a guess. I'm sure it's like 50% higher than what we are. but I don't want to sound too bearish. I don't want to expect 12 because it's so easy to get bearish at the bottom. Do you know how many people were so bearish in 2018, right? They thought we were for sure going sub 1,000 on BTC, right?
Well, that's what's going to happen. It's going to happen wherever the bottom occurs. You know, you're at 20K now, they're going to call for 12. If we go to 12, they're going to call for 6. If we go to 6, they're going to call for 3. If we go to 3, they're going to call for 1,200. You know, like you'll just relive every past level. At some point, it's a buy. You can wait for the market to tell you it's a buy, I guess. You know, you don't have to buy the bottom. You don't have to. You don't want to be a forced seller, but you don't have to buy the bottom.
Well, that's what a lot of this was. Like you already mentioned, it was forced selling. Not saying we aren't bearish for other reasons, but when the momentum's already bearish and then you have forced selling on top of that, you get what we have now, which is just like a dumpster fire, you know?
And it feels capitulatory. The problem is the price action's not looking capitulatory. You know, when you have a drag on the 4-hour, like you're showing on your chart, capitulation doesn't mean touching the same price 3 or 4 times. That's what's concerning me here. If it had stopped the other day with that wick and then bounced like $8,000, you know, like that would feel capitulatory. This does not feel capitulatory on the mid time frames. And so if this is going to be the bottom, it might look capitulatory on a weekly, but it's certainly not doing so on these lower time frames. And we've yet to see that kind of recovery from it. So it makes it really, really, I mean, I've tried to buy this twice now and I've given it no leash whatsoever, basically. I mean, I'm just like super, super tight on my buys. And
well, it's starting to develop on a technical basis on the 4-hour, at least, is one of my favorite trades, which is you have a bull div or a bear div with an associated pattern, in this case, potentially a falling wedge. We saw this in 2018 as well, and people will say, oh, these wedges always break in the direction they're pointing, and I disagree, and we can go back and forth on that with people. But ideally, we get this like liquidity stab to 20, and people buy that up with a vengeance. If this is going to be this like 90-day range we're in from 20 to 25, I don't know what it ends up being, but that's a possibility. I don't want to rule that out either. But it's just, again, there's so much stuff coming with the macro side of things. It's hard to even want to think about taking that trade. And if I'm thinking, okay, I don't want to take that trade, who the hell is going to want to take that trade, right? Who's going to buy BTC or ETH here?
Only people that are looking at really long time horizons, that's going to take them a long time to get filled. They don't know if this is the bottom, but it's worth starting. And they also have, I would put it this way. If you have a tolerance for a 50% additional downside, then it's probably a fine place to buy. But you can't look at this and say like, there's no way it can drop another 50%. You do hit sometimes where it's like, all right, it's done, you know? You get the minus 30% in a day. You hit the targets off the top. You know, when ETH hit 95% off the top and Bitcoin hit 85% off the top, those were like very clear cyclical bottom type of levels. Problem is, we're not quite to those types of percentages yet across the board, no matter what, you know, whether you're looking at majors or altcoins or whatever. Simultaneously, we continue to see down weeks and selling in the S&P. In my mind, the S&P is worth a dabble, but it's probably another 5% or so from what looks like a clear bounce zone to me. It's more of a, maybe it's exhaustion and it could chop around here, but I think the S&P could go lower personally in terms of before it needs some type of test of a bounce. I could see another week, another 2 weeks to go to its own 200-week moving average. And if it's over, then we've lived through recessions spending like a year plus below the 200-week moving average. So in that case, it's like way off the bottom, but there's lots of bounces that happen in things with actual value.
Well, I think you have to game out the possibility of CPI rising again in the next print and the Fed's decision around that. They said they're not going to be systematic about it. They said they're not going to do 75 or 100 next time, but they also said that last time. And And here we are.
That actually surprised me. I don't know if you were paying close attention to that, but when people were talking 3-4 days ahead of time saying it's going to be a 75% or 75 point hike, I was like, wait, what? They basically had written out they're doing 50, you know, for the next several meetings. And what happened was they clearly leaked the 75 because they knew it would nuke everything. So then it started pricing itself in over time. And by the time it came, 75 was expected. So now they're saying, all right, 75 is done, back to 50, unless like nothing changes. And then it's probably going to do it again, you know, like keep rolling 75. The impact on the market is huge, man. I don't know if you've seen 30-year mortgage rates have worked their way up to like 6.3% on average, up double in 6 months. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before, but they kind of backed themselves into a corner, not to be like the crypto bro talking about legacy all of a sudden, but the Fed backed themselves into a corner. Typically, they want to be lowering rates in this type of environment, but like rates were already zero. What were they going to do? Then you can talk about stagflation and unemployment being low and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, what else can they do besides raise rates here? What else can they do besides crash the market? Like, they have no other tools left, right? I guess they can do nothing and let it like fester or marinate. But when they're told like inflation is this, it's rising, you need to do something. And that, what else are they going to do, right? Like, they have no other tools, you know? I guess hold their assets on the balance sheet. Don't raise rates. Like,
well, they can adjust rates and they can adjust the balance sheet. And right now they're raising rates and tightening. That's about as strong as they can get. I think the next thing is, to what degree do they have patience and to guide this so-called soft landing? So, you know, they think they can do the soft landing. It feels like pretty freaking bumpy to me, because you're simultaneously wrecking everything and not fixing inflation. So I tend to think that as is, they're working. I think they're over-adjusting, honestly. I think that inflation is still high, but we're also destroying demand massively, which is what you're trying to do. But I think we're not seeing that show up in the numbers yet. But when it shows up, your inflation will go from very high to quite low, maybe outside of the energy crisis. And the energy crisis, I don't know that affecting all this is going to have an impact on it, you know? So if you're just destroying demand, not helping with the energy side of things, then are you actually helping overall with inflation? You know what I mean?
Yeah, the assumption is that we're going to destroy demand because demand's the problem. When in reality, it's probably is more to do with supply than demand, like you're saying.
Yeah, you're destroying demand, but you're not actually really destroying demand on energy per se. And so you're just destroying demand on the rest of the economy. So you're risking massive stagflation, and you're just assisting in that process where you still have inflation running hot because the underlying issues causing inflation are not things that you're affecting by destroying demand. And consumer stuff, and it ends up just hurting everyone because they're not getting like fake rich along the way, right? If it was just proper inflation and everybody number go up on hard money and all the real things, none of that's happening. It's just the dollar going ballistic, and you know, I don't know. There you go. So,
yeah, the DXY losing that resistance level. If the DXY does go to what, like 60-year highs at that point? I don't even know.
Yeah, the next place is like 120, which is January 2002. That's an incredible level for the Dixie. But then you could go back to get to 160, 162 is 1985. So after the dollar strength from getting inflation under control after the 70s. And I think that's not unrealistic. So you're talking about incredible dollar movement. So reduction in buying power for most of the world.
Well, I think that's the journey for BTC to 12 is Dixie is just run away. VIX goes to 50 plus, you know, whatever. S&P and NASDAQ continue to just nuke to zero, right? Like that's the environment for me that's in the back of my head thinking, yeah, this looks good to long, but there's all this potential stuff that's looking more and more like a reality every day.
Yeah, this move that we've had in the Dixie so far is so strong that it looks like it wants to continue to gain strength. And a lot of this has been relative basis issues, right? You know, like it's against the euro, it's against the yen. So anyway, strong dollar, very, very, very strong dollar, headwind on everything, rates continuing to be to increase, as there doesn't seem to be like a stop of when do we stop. You know, we have to go quite a ways to get back to where they want to be. There's another at least what, 2 full points left to get to 3%.
Yeah, I heard the last of was 3.4 now, 3.4 to 3.75, something like that.
Yeah. So
as long, well, the other side of this is, you know, we stay connected at the hip and we go down with the ship, right? But we could also break a correlation. I don't see a world in where we do that, but if we're trying to game out like the decision tree, you know, if the correlation breaks, we might be okay. But how's that going to transpire? I have no idea.
Yeah. You know, I read Ray Dalio's Changing World Order book. It's very good. It's not, people acted like it was just some shill fest for China, but it wasn't, in my opinion. It was basically the same thing as the debt cycles book, except if it was for like dynastic cycles. And it was really interesting, kind of the essentially creates a compulsion for like hard money. So it doesn't really matter what the relative basis happen, like what the relative basis is for currencies. But if fiat is losing trust in general, then it can create a demand for hard money. What we don't know yet, to your point, is Bitcoin going to be included in that? Is Ethereum going to be included in that alongside gold? But gold has probably got a bullish case in it. Once the rate side of things, like the rates are a drag on gold. But I think if you have a scenario where gold truly pops, like Bitcoin at least will also find its way to pop as well. And find strength, but how bad could it get first? You know? But I think it's impossible to ignore Bitcoin in an environment where you're saying, okay, we just don't trust fiat in a changing world order, and we're seeking hard money. And I think Bitcoin could start to look like a lot more like the commodities that have performed well. And the decoupling is from Bitcoin as a risk asset and into Bitcoin as hard money. That's very speculative, very, very speculative.
Yeah, I think that's where people want it to go for sure, whether or not it gets there.
It's just not what the market's treated it as.
I guess we'll find out. You know, it's funny if you think about like how Bitcoin's created. It's very industrial and very much a commodity from that sense, right? Like it's literally, you're kind of digging it out of the ground sort of situation. It's definitely, from my perspective, a commodity based on how it's created, you know, versus like an ICO where you just like pre-mine everything and people get vested shares or whatever. I think seeing the differences there, like delineating them, makes it more and more obvious every day to me. Like, okay, yes, like this is not a security. It never was, never will be. Versus ETH, where it's kind of like in between both worlds. It had a pre-mine, it had vesting, it had also, it didn't have vesting, but you know what I mean? Like, it's understandable where people are trying to classify this stuff and put it in a genre and say like, this is that. It makes more and more sense to me.
So there are a couple things in the regular market that start to look like reversals. One is oil's down like 6% today, back to 110. And then also the 30-year rate is backing off a little bit. And I mean, this is like a day, maybe two of doing so. But those are the types of things that you want to see, right? Essentially, an ease of pressure from the energy side of things and a bit of appetite for lower rates, meaning less demand for those things. And VIX down off the top of the range. That's not really reflected in markets. Like, the markets are moving 0.5%. You know, they're not doing anything serious, but that is the start of what you would want to see for potential reversal. What we're not seeing is that reflected in the dollar, because the dollar is doing the opposite. But those are some of the cracks that you would want to see for like some type of adjustment, especially in oil. I'm pretty bullish oil still. It seems like the energy crisis is going to be really hard to prevent. I don't know if you've seen it across like nat gas and stuff too. It seems like it's going to be really problematic in the winter.
I got a notice that my electricity is going from 11 cents per kilowatt hour to 22. Double. How are people going to afford that?
I don't know.
I think it's important for everybody. Here's your homework, listeners and Twitchers, and whoever else. Figure out in your state or your country or wherever you are, what the percentage of electricity production is. Like, is it coal? Is it petroleum? Is it natural gas? Is it nuclear? I never looked into that completely. It's interesting to know and to understand like what could be ahead for you based on your state or your provider, like where they actually get that electricity from. Because if it's nat gas, you are in trouble for sure. Yeah,
for sure. We got a good comment from Up All and Crony, which is worth bringing up as a decision point. So the GBTC conversion to ETF, they have until July 6th to make a decision. That premium is gigantic right now. So if they, if Grayscale wins this fight, then that could certainly be the type of thing that sparks your Bitcoin bottom. Certainly would create an easing on the spread for GBTC. I imagine that it would start to find parity quite quickly. So that's a really interesting trade. If you want to YOLO a bit, is you can seek your exposure via GBTC and that discount. But then if it gets rejected, the discount might widen further. But that's a fun one, and certainly at least allows us to put something on the calendar within the next month for figuring out what might happen.
Same what 1215 just said. You know, as a person who works for Valkyrie, who deals with ETFs, I can't really comment too much on it. But you know, like 1215 is saying, how can they approve given recent events? Right,
like the recent events make it much harder, much harder.
I think until there are some more regulations on the books that they're satisfied with, right? Like, this isn't about Bitcoiners or the Bitcoin ethos or whatever, right?
Deny it. It's like, yeah.
I don't see any of that getting better anytime soon. So I think the premium going lower makes more sense to me, or the discount going lower. But, you know, if you think that they're going to approve that, then yeah, that should close pretty quickly.
You know what I think is especially troubling is one of the things that was going around with the 3AC stuff was basically offering an ARB trade on GBTC for the conversion. So it's like a fund that is now seemingly defunct was offering various parties a GBTC spread trade.
I can say with knowing this information very well that this is a true statement. They were offering that trade to many people.
Yeah. It's on Twitter, and there's been multiple verified sources for that. So when you have that occurring, one of the largest funds rolling off, like, that's not going to be encouraging for the SEC to convert GBTC.
I also saw that 3AC already has or had a bunch of GBTC that they apparently had to sell.
I've heard that that's already been taken care of OTC. So somebody captured it, but I don't think that the remaining ripple effects are necessarily contagion inducing. So like somebody that, like, let's say 3AC owes somebody $1 billion or something, that I don't think that's one isolated to like some single entity or anything that could then cause further contagion because they're forced to sell, in the way that Luna contributed to 3AC's need to sell. I think probably most of that component played out. It just doesn't mean they're the only distressed fund, the only distressed, you know, like that Celsius was the only distressed lender. So like there's other ways for things to go belly up in a variety of worlds, you know, like, and then further downside can induce further downside.
Yeah, we were talking about this internally, and people were talking about Lehman Brothers, who had experience with that in 08. And I learned that apparently they're still dealing with Lehman, like the legacy world. They're still dealing with that fallout today. Like they're still unwinding that stuff today. So there's this expectation, I think, that like, oh, Terra exploded, UST exploded, everything's going to get sorted quickly. And 3AC is going under, right? That's going to get sorted quickly. Celsius has issues. That's going to get sorted. Like these things could take a lot of time to get figured out.
There's already like a line for filing lawsuits against 3AC and trying to capture whatever remaining assets they have. Cause there's stuff that's illiquid, right? They have vested things and part, you know, deals that they don't even have the coins yet. They have the contracts for the right to the coins or whatever. And there's going to be a line out the door of people that want those who got screwed over in various partnerships of theirs. So there's definitely fallout. It's just not necessarily contagion inducing fallout.
Yeah. And I'll just say on our end, from like that, we're not part of any Celsius anything or 3AC.
Yeah.
Anything. Yeah.
I saw one other thing. Actually, I'm starting to go completely blank. Forget what I was going to say entirely.
Should we talk about the staked ETH stuff?
Yeah.
That's a part of everything. Here's the problem with crypto, right? Everything talks to everything else. Everybody touches everything for the most part, whether they think they are or not. Celsius and staked ETH, 3AC and staked ETH, right? Lido and staked ETH and everything that's going on there. And Curve, right? And DeFi and getting yield on your yield, right? That was the vogue thing to do.
Apparently people were folding staked ETH to double, like multi-lever it. Is that what part of the issue was?
Well, there's these Aave loans that are based on staked ETH. And yeah, they just had a vote yesterday, I think, to purposefully make people add more collateral and change the liquidation levels. From what I can tell, that didn't pass, but people can.
Yeah, that's what I was, outside of the DeFi component, that's what I was going to say earlier, is there's all these lenders who are centralized and they can change their governance whenever they want. And basically they're calling these funds and saying, look, you got to post more collateral. So they're changing your collateral requirements at the same time that you might be distressed in your positioning, so that posting the collateral becomes more and more difficult and you get squeezed out even though you were safe before. But because the lending scenario was so loose, because it was essentially a perpetual loan ecosystem, now it's like it's getting called in. You're getting called on stuff that you've never been called on before, weren't expecting it, were treating it as long-term collateral, and now it's not. Meltem Demiris had a really good thread on that.
There's the liquidity on Curve, at least, right? This isn't the only place you could do this trade. You can go OTC if you're big enough, which is what Celsius probably had to do. But if you're going strictly through Curve, you're taking like a 5% plus hit on that trade. And that this was never a peg, to be clear. This was
two one ST.
What's that? Yeah.
It's at 0.9397. Is that right? What I'm saying there?
Yeah. But yeah, it was never a peg. It was just an exchange rate. And the redemption is going to be there eventually, right? For the staked ETH. But if people want it now, they're going to have to pay a discount, right? Or a premium if you're swapping in between.
This is a much cleaner arbitrage play than the GBTC one, for what it's worth, because you're at least going to get one ETH once the merge happens.
One ETH is one ETH, guys.
One steeth is one ETH. Except for liquidity now. So one staked ETH is one ETH. It's just one ETH on a futures curve. So it's in backwardation, right? With a flexible deadline on the end of the futures curve for whenever the merge occurs. And so this is what I think at least contributed apparently to the Celsius side of things, is they were playing with staked ETH, whatever, acting like it's liquid. And then when they need the funds, they couldn't get them because it was blowing out this spread because their liquidity wasn't strong enough.
Right. And this whole thing sort of exploded because of the promise of additional yield, right? Like this instrument exists because people wanted liquid staked ETH, you know?
Yeah.
And then from there, there were these additional derivatives or loans or whatever collateral you could use to take this and say, okay, let's try to get yield on our yield, right? If that's what people did.
Which again has no, there's no problem with the product or the protocol or the infrastructure. All of it, from my point of view, worked pretty much as expected. The problem was on the risk assessment by the parties partaking in the trade.
Exactly. Right. There was no doomsday scenario, not even a miniature doomsday scenario that they considered.
Funds. Like, do you have the liquidity to get the funds if you need the funds? In what scenario could you need the funds? Can you manage that scenario? And the answer was they couldn't. And so Celsius paid the price and so did their customers. Man, on the Celsius side of things, what really is sad on that one is there's people who were in a scenario of providing their stuff. What are we looking at there? Is that your $2 billion wallet?
This is, I believe this is Celsius's wallet based on on-chain analysis. So I believe they still have.
Harpe Noctem has $2 billion on-chain.
I believe they still have a lot of staked ETH that they're dealing with on their books. Go ahead.
Gotcha. Well, so in the Celsius scenario, they paused redemptions by customers. And that's the worst because there were customers who had not like taken their stuff out and they were relying on their own liquidity from Celsius to be able to withdraw their coins from Celsius to use to repay other things. And they had the ability to get themselves whole and then Celsius completely blocked it. So by Celsius being ridiculous and not managing their risk, they ruined customers who were at least trying to effectively manage their own risk. Now, they may not have horcruxed themselves well enough in the sense of they had too narrow of a risk profile for places where they were keeping funds. But I mean, that's messed up. Like have to have lost as much trust as possible. Like they're done.
Yeah, I think the insidious side of it is they were potentially selling what you gave them and putting it somewhere else to get yield, right?
Oh yeah, they were changing the products that they were receiving as deposits.
So whether or not that's legal, right? I think we're going to find out whether or not there's regulations coming around that. We're going to find out. I think money market accounts went through a similar thing in 1998, I'm told. I'm not well-versed on TradFi stuff, but...
Yeah, so Fistful of Joys asked if they could have hedged their duration risk. There might be various ways they could have hedged what things they did, but obviously they got out of whack in terms of managing their positions. I've also heard... they're just complete degenerates. There's been rumors, public rumors, that they were actively, like it felt Substratum-esque. If you remember those days of Substratum trading their treasury.
Well, that was the argument. Like they know they're insolvent. So now they're going to try to trade their way out of insolvency. And inevitably, that's just the worst thing they could do.
There was strong rumor that they were trying to trade their way out of potential insolvency. I don't know what tokens they were trading. Like, were they trading assets from their customers? Were they trading their own token? I have no idea. But all of that is like bad, bad, bad. You know, like that's go straight to jail type of stuff. Anyway, dark times, man. Dark times.
But they also have this loan that we know is theirs on MakerDAO.
I thought they paid down most of that. Someone liquidated on stuff. There's all kinds of stuff been mislabeled too.
Yes, I believe this is them. I believe this is their vault. I believe they still have a bunch of WBTC locked into this, right? They did pay it down a little bit, and that will lower the liquidation price. They did add collateral that will lower the liquidation price. Them adding collateral potentially may have been why they had to close deposits, right? It was either get liquidated on this massive loan or say, you know what, we can't give you your money right now because we have this issue where we need to add collateral.
We have to use your funds to add collateral.
I don't, to be clear, I don't know if that's what happened. I'm just kind of reading the tea leaves a little bit here.
Yeah, pre-sale Schmeesale said their terms of service and agreement notices became legalese and central bankish because they said your coins are not your coins in the event of insolvency or hypervolatility. I've not read their terms of service, but I did see something along those lines that there's lines in there that's like, sorry, you know, if we go bankrupt, then you don't have these anymore. It's just,
we need the Celsius mess to get cleaned up. We need the 3AC mess to get cleaned up, at least to a satisfactory level where people aren't afraid to take risk again, you know, because people with real money are waiting for this stuff like this to clear up on the crypto side of things, you know, because they know this stuff's everywhere. Wall Street Journal, Zero Hedge, wherever else, right? Everyone's aware of this now. This isn't like a secret or an open secret. People know what's going on. They know that this staked ETH peg is in trouble. I couldn't find those Aave loans anymore, so I don't know what they did with those. Because the website I was using, I can't find them. Maybe someone has access to Parsec.
The news flow has been so fast that I've not been able to keep up. I'm just like basically trusting Twitter once someone says, and like it's repeated enough or like confirmed by someone smart on the initial report. You know, like that's just so tough to stay in tune with everything.
Yeah, so it's worth monitoring these liquidation levels and whether or not people are hunting them, because if people are hunting them, then that's where we're going to go, right? If you think we're going to 12 and Celsius's liquidation's at 13.6 and they don't add or pay off anything, right? Then the market's going to be in trouble further, you know? Like these are not small potatoes type things going on behind the scenes in DeFi, which is why I love these DeFi people coming out saying, oh, this would have never happened in DeFi in regards to Celsius. And I'm like, guys, read the room. DeFi created this mess. They could just go out and do this stuff. If DeFi didn't exist, what are you, crazy? Like, you're delusional. You're delusional. It's just amazing to me.
It is.
Do we want to talk about ETH or ETH BTC real quick? Do you have any levels on ETH?
One thing I was going to mention about the DeFi, CeFi component of it is the DeFi trade, it creates these targets that, you know, people want to chase it, but it also, like we were seeing them adjust in real time, you know, like we see the deposits come in. I think the transparency can be very dangerous because it makes hunting easier. And it's also kind of refreshing because you know what happened, you know? So, I mean, there's two sides of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I get it. But to say DeFi is like this innocent angel, I mean, come on.
Well, of course, it's got its own problems.
Like, get real, you know?
Yeah. All right, show me how bad ETH is.
So there are a lot of people talking about 400 ETH lately. Because again, like, where do you draw levels here if we lose the previous all-time high, right? Like, where's the range? Range is down there, right? Like, it's just the level, you know? We don't have a lot of trading history between here and 600, here and 750, whatever it is. It doesn't matter that weekly RSI is at an all-time low. Like, it doesn't matter. We got guys getting carried off the dance floor. And you're and there's people looking at TA thinking, oh yeah, 1,000's gonna hold, 20K is gonna hold. It's like, we gotta clean up our house first, right? The world is burning around us, so it's hard for people to want to do anything here. I think going back to everything we just said, yes, ETH has had 11 weeks red in a row, but like at the same time, there's so much selling involved here, right? So,
all right, let's put it this way. If we repeat and do the same thing that's happened before, go down 95%, that's $250 ETH. So if you have the exact same size of drawdown from a percentage perspective, it could get as bad as $250. I find that quite unlikely, but that's your starting point of what could occur, to your point, once these other things break, your previous all-time high, your 200 week, whatever. there are levels in between that. You could, I think you can look at like 770, which was the dead cat bounce in 2018. And then you start looking at like breakdown levels from back then, 500, 450, 400. It all becomes the same. There'll be some kind of wick. If it gets to that level, you're going to end up with some kind of insane macro wick down here that becomes a buy.
Well, this goes back to the DeFi conversation, right? If there's forced selling and people know what's going on and they see this stuff happening, why would you buy, right? Just let it go to zero or whatever it's going to do. This is a part of the reason why these guys who got together to try to back UST and bail it out were like, you know what? We're just going to let it go because we know that it can get way worse from here. We don't want to get in front of that freight train.
My thing is, we're kind of in that spot. We just did that. That's what happened from 2K to 1K, you know? So now people are wanting it again. It's like, oh, well, you might get contagion. We've had contagion. This was the, I mean, we got people selling tens of thousands of ETH in a go and getting liquidated like crazy. So you can certainly point to things right now that are, we're in the live version of that. It's just, is it done? So, you know.
Right. Yes. So the question you have to ask is,
but we're in it right now.
Do you think staked ETH going to 80 cents, right? If it does, is that going to create a problem? That's a question you have to ask, you know.
I don't
know. Like, how bad do you think things can get, and how do things get worse based on the DeFi loans that exist on the book, right? I don't want us to go to 400. I'm just being realistic and thinking, if there's another 30,000 ETH that's going to get forcibly sold, like, yeah, we're going to go lower, right? It's just that's all there is to it.
I think what could happen is, if there are people who have no ability to get out of their current situation, entities, funds, whatever. So they're basically sitting there. They can't do anything else to unwind, right? They are just hoping the market doesn't go lower because they have no control. If that is the scenario, if that's truly the scenario, the market will figure out a way to get them out of their coins. That I believe in. If the biggest entities do have the control to like recollateralize or take their lumps and get out of their positioning, then it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to do all those things. In terms of which do I think is true? I think we're probably in a scenario where the market's going to want to find out, you know, like if you have the path to downside is very clear, to go find out who is at risk further down, who is not in a position of control. And all it takes is one good weekly to go figure it out.
We didn't even talk about the stablecoin Tether stuff that's going on too.
Yeah, it seems like a bunch of crap to me.
It's every piece of the industry that's being questioned, because why not, right? Tether's come out, to be clear, and said Celsius hasn't affected their book and 3AC hasn't affected their book, but.
And they wound down their own commercial paper to a massive degree. Like they had, 8 months ago, they started winding down their commercial paper exposure. So. And they're continuing to do so. So I think a run on Tether is so unlikely. And the question is, what have they had anything exposed from? Were they lending to any people that have blown up or what? Whatever. I think Tether FUD continues to be not necessarily warrantless, but uneventful.
The boogeyman, the soup du jour, whatever.
Yeah. Like there may be like nuggets of truth and risk here or there, but they haven't resulted in actual problems for Tether from a redemption perspective or solvency perspective or ability to service their customers in any capacity. And so none of it's panned out ever.
Well, lately, but yes, I agree. I'm not going to sit here and defend Tether all the way to the hilt, but I haven't seen or heard anything recently behind the scenes even to warrant or think that they're in trouble on that side of things. So,
yeah. I'd like to look at the ETH BTC side of things just as a caveat.
Remember when we said this should break up? I remember that I said that.
We said it should break up, but we also said if it breaks down, then oops, you know, it seemed.
But this is the best it's ever looked in this range, right? And it still couldn't think of all the stuff, right? I think of this tweet from Elise Killeen, I think is her name. Like, you had NFTs, you had DeFi, you had all this stuff, you had all these people come in, and this is the best ETH could get against BTC. 0.1, not even.
It looked a little too good to be true in that consolidation triangle thing. Like, I feel like whenever you're drawing those diagonals as a support, it just ends up looking like the type of thing you want to destroy. Either way, from a level perspective, I guess you could save. This is a bottom of range, kind of, not really, in my opinion. Looks like no man's land. I think you can easily look at the 200-week SMA, which is at 0.041, basically 0.04, which is where it's been ever since it existed in 2020. It's been like the median line of Ethereum BTC. So that's, I don't think you count out 0.04 or 0.041.
Yeah, I mean, how does this, until things get cleared up, like, this could go lower, sure. Am I going to short it here? No, but.
Yeah. Well,
it doesn't look healthy. I'll give you that.
Different. Like, do you want to own it here? It's a better question.
I mean, if you like the 08, you're going to love it at 05.
Yeah. And then you, there's a couple other really interesting things. I mean, Solana is actually performing really well versus Ethereum over the last week. Of course, they got absolutely bodied before Ethereum did. It went, basically did exactly the trade that I had highlighted ages ago, and I was way too scared to buy it. I did not buy 25, 26, whatever it was. I was looking at it, and I was like, I don't know. And it bounced right off it. So I don't know. This is still not a chart that's attractive, but on a relative strength perspective, Solana seems less phased by some of these recent developments. Whereas if you look at Avalanche or something like that, they had obviously lots of 3AC exposure. But, you know, Solana is kind of standing out on the positive side of things relative to some of the other layer one stuff. Not sure what that means, but that's
that. I think it's all early for any of that stuff. Fundamentally, in a bear market, who knows where that goes? In a bear market,
you got ARK pulled up. Good lord, what are those on the bottom?
Somebody was asking about ARK, and I saw this chart today from Bianco, and man, what a drawdown for ARK! A drawdown.
Is that their flows? So
no, that's the drawdown.
Oh, it's the percent. Price.
Yeah.
Actually worse when you look at it's basically the performance for the individual participants in the fund, because the majority of their participants in ARK entered at the highs. So when you actually look at the relative performance based on the volume of inflows, it's even worse, because basically nobody's in profit. All the people that are in now are people who entered way higher, not entered in 2016, you know?
Yeah.
So that's not right.
Yeah. So I think to summarize, I don't hate DCA here on anything. You know, we're down what, 70% plus from highs?
Yeah.
I've
told a friend, I've told a neighbor, I'll probably tell a family member this weekend. If you can stomach a long wait and 50%+ more from here, then it's a great time to DCA over the course of like 2 years, which is it's a mega hedge. But I mean, that's the time frame and the span that I think you have to feel some degree of confidence that this can be a successful trade.
Yeah, it's a great time to be boring again and just ignore price and know that you're probably not going to be in profit for quite some time. You know, that's it. That's kind of it. That's my non-professional, non-licensed, non-investment advice.
And compare that investment opportunity to other opportunities that might exist in the world. Like, we don't exist in a vacuum in crypto. So you have to say, is crypto where I want to be, or is there something else that makes more sense for me? I still find the economy as a whole very difficult to identify, like, what's investable in the economy at the moment. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough when everything is melting.
Yeah. The Dixie's up 15%. How about that for investable dollars?
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
Me neither. But we'll still be here. We'll be paying attention.
But
we'll
like us this week. I don't know if I'm numb to it at this point, but I don't feel like depressed or distressed, even though my net worth is down significantly. Maybe I should have a bigger feeling about it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's your superpower though. You've always been that way.
Yeah. But like in 2018, like I was really, really, I was pretty in despair at that point.
Not feeling cozy.
I don't feel that low so far. So maybe we have to go lower for me to.
From here, good news, everybody. Anyway, thanks for being with us. I appreciate y'all listening, watching, whatnot. Follow Josh at Carpe Noctem. Me, love your shadows. Talk to you next time. Bye bye. And go to flip.xyz. I need you registered.
The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cars.
Easy River has indeed run dry.
I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely breathe. Oh, the chains. Oh, the chains. Oh, the chains. Come release me from the chains.